democracy under siege, but cultural diplomacy, AI and AMP, humankind are winning. On March 18 and 19, the World Forum in Berlin, Germany, on the future of democracy, AI/tech, and humankind promoted a renewal of democracy and presented suggestions, policy papers, and law drafts on how to improve the state of the world. The World Council on AI developed a framework for AI, algorithms, social media, and digital life to elevate and not endanger democracy, freedom, and humankind. Former Minister of Tourism and Foreign Minister for Zimbabwe, a former candidate for UN Tourism Secretary General, took the stage to present the African perspective as a son of Africa and a global citizen. The World Forum heard remarks by Pope Francis, US President Bill Clinton, Secretary Hillary Clinton, philosopher Yuval Noah Harari, Jeffrey Robertson KC, First Lady of Ukraine Alina Zelenska, Vice President of the European Parliament Katerina Barley, former Prime Minister of Israel Ehud Olmert, former President of Afghanistan Hamid Karzai, former President of Tunisia Moncef Marzouki, Nobel Peace Laureates Alexandra Matvichuk, Maria Ressa, Tawakkol Kerman, Narges Mohammadi, from Iran prison, Russian opposition leaders Vladimir Karamirza and Ilya Yashin, the world's leading scientist on longevity Professor David Sinclair on how to stop aging and extend human lifespan. Among the 200 speakers at the World Forum's 50 panel discussions are the world's leading minds in their fields, such as the ethicist Peter Singer, the first female Muslim imam, and the godfathers of AI, such as Yoshua Benjo. Global think tanks are constituted mainly by former public servants, bureaucrats, politicians, academicians, and interdisciplinary scholars whose purpose is to research a wide range of policies, issues, or ideas, including but not limited to political strategy, social, economic, and public policies, culture, and technology. It is global practice for politicians to retire into these publicly and privately funded institutions, and most governments use them as policy sounding boards. Dr. Walter Mzembe told ETN. Iturbonews.com. Here I am standing between the 12th Prime Minister of Israel, 2006-9, Ehud Olmert, and the former Foreign Affairs Minister of Palestine, Nasser al-Kidwa, nephew of the late PLO leader Chairman Yasser Arafat. The two, who are working together globally to promote the two-state solution to the perpetual Israeli-Palestinian conflict, are a fine example of cultural diplomacy. I met them to discuss our own think tank and its global and continental vision and thrust on contributing to closing the global diplomacy deficit, conflict resolution and management, diplomacy mentorship, training, and education, and taking the practice of cultural diplomacy to the grassroots, shop floor, and community level. Many conflicts, including party factionalism or rampant conflict practice, are resolved by cultural diplomacy and dialogue. Mzembe added, "We honored Bill Clinton with the Peacemaker of the Century Award for his role in peacemaking in the Balkans." Dr. Walter Mzembe addresses the global think tank. Dr. Mzembe's address at the World Forum on the Future of Democracy. Distinguished guests, esteemed colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. I stand before you today as a son of Africa and a global citizen, deeply invested in the intersections of diplomacy, governance, and sustainable development. This gathering could not be more timely. The world finds itself at a pivotal moment when democracy is under siege, global power dynamics are shifting, and technology is reshaping societies in unprecedented ways. The question before us is no longer whether change is happening, but how we will shape it. Nowhere are these challenges more pronounced than in Africa, a continent of extraordinary potential but also of persistent contestation between history and modernity, sovereignty and global influence, and its developmental ambitions and the strategic interests of external actors. Africa. Isn't it fortuitous that this global forum is taking place at a time when SADC, the East African Community, the African Union, the European Union, and indeed the United Nations itself are seized with a perennial conflict in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo? This was created by the partition of Africa and was conceived in this city, Berlin. This partition resulted in the creation of 55 sovereign states, some viable and some non-viable. Still, more importantly, the source of this conflict alluded to is that it separated homogeneous cultural communities with straight lines that we call borders today. External actors' extractive exploits in Africa and in the DRC are a major source of conflict in Africa and geopolitical contestations between East and West over who gets the bulk of Africa's raw materials and resources. One of the defining shifts in Africa's international engagements over the past two decades has been its deepening ties with the East, particularly China and other key Eastern partners such as Russia, India, and Turkey. This strategic pivot is underpinned by economic pragmatism and a recognition that Africa must diversify its alliances to advance its developmental goals. The numbers tell a compelling story. China alone has pledged over $1 trillion in infrastructure, mining, and energy investments across Africa, with additional financing from Russia in security and nuclear energy and India in pharmaceuticals and technology. The Belt and Road Initiative, BRI, continues to redefine Africa's economic geography, linking over 46 African nations to China's trade and logistics networks. By contrast, the West, particularly the United States, has struggled to maintain the same level of engagement. U.S. direct investment in Africa has declined by 30% over the past decade, while the U.S. International Development Finance Corporation, DFC, has committed a modest $60 billion to Africa, a fraction of what China has poured into the continent. The EU's Global Gateway Initiative, aimed at countering China's BRI, has committed 150 billion euros. Yet, much of it remains in bureaucratic limbo, failing to match the speed and efficiency of its eastern competitors. However, while eastern investments have catalyzed growth, they are not without their complexities. Concerns about debt sustainability, transparency, and the overarching implications for Africa's sovereignty have emerged. Many African states are now negotiating debt restructurings with China, with Zambia serving as a cautionary case study of how infrastructure-led development can lead to fiscal vulnerabilities. Africa does not reject the West or embrace the East uncritically. Rather, it seeks engagement on its own terms, through partnerships that acknowledge its aspirations, respect its sovereignty, and support its development trajectory without imposing ideological conditions. If the West is to compete with the East in Africa effectively, its approach must shift from traditional aid-based diplomacy to genuine, mutually beneficial partnerships. The future of Western Africa relations cannot be anchored solely in development assistance or military cooperation. Still, it must be grounded in economic opportunity, technological collaboration, and most crucially, cultural diplomacy. Cultural diplomacy is often underestimated in global geopolitics, yet history demonstrates its enduring power. During the Cold War, the United States leveraged cultural diplomacy through institutions such as the United States Information Agency, USIA, broadcasting Western ideals and engaging directly with global audiences through art, music, and literature. Today, the world is no less ideological, and as digital information warfare accelerates, cultural engagement remains a critical tool for influence and cooperation. Africa, with its rich heritage, diverse linguistic and artistic traditions, and a youthful, globally connected population, presents an extraordinary opportunity for both the West and the East to reinforce relationships through cultural diplomacy. But this requires more than performative gestures, it demands a fundamental shift in policy and investment. One of the most effective ways to achieve this is by strengthening non-governmental organizations, NGOs, that specialize in cultural exchange, education, and civic empowerment. My work in cultural diplomacy has demonstrated that when people-to-people ties are strengthened, political and economic relations inevitably follow. Studies by Nye, 2004, on soft power confirm that nations that engage with others through cultural means, not just economic and military coercion, tend to foster more sustainable and cooperative relationships. The support of NGOs is, therefore, not a matter of philanthropy but a strategic imperative. African NGOs are at the forefront of local governance, education, and cross-cultural engagements, yet they often lack the institutional capacity to scale their impact. Peer-reviewed research by Edwards and Hume, 2015, highlights that donor-driven NGO models frequently fall into the trap of dependency, unable to assert their autonomy due to funding constraints and shifting geopolitical priorities. Suppose the West is serious about fostering a lasting presence in Africa. In that case, it must invest in the sustainability of these organizations rather than using them as transient instruments of policy objectives. This requires three key interventions. First, capacity building must be redefined beyond basic training. NGOs need institutional support that allows them to develop independent revenue streams, access new funding mechanisms, and build governance structures that enhance credibility and impact. This means facilitating access to endowments, impact investment funds, and international markets for African cultural and creative industries. Second, Western powers must rethink their engagement with African youth, who comprise most of the continent's population. Africa's young people are not merely passive recipients of aid or development programs, they are digital natives shaping global discourse in real time. Platforms such as TikTok, Instagram, and Afrofuturist art forms are redefining narratives about Africa, and policymakers must embrace this evolution. Cultural diplomacy cannot be confined to elite academic exchanges, it must permeate social media, creative industries, and technology-driven storytelling platforms. Third, and perhaps most crucially, partnerships must be built on trust and mutual respect. Africa does not need another lecture on democracy but requires genuine allies in its quest for inclusive governance, sustainable development, and global recognition. The West must move beyond outdated engagement paradigms rooted in paternalism and embrace an Africa that is confident, assertive, and unwilling to compromise its strategic interests. China and other Eastern powers have recognized this and are making aggressive inroads into Africa's cultural and educational sectors. The Confucius Institutes, for instance, have expanded to 61 African universities in 46 countries, offering scholarships, language programs, and cultural exchange initiatives that reinforce Chinese influence. By contrast, only 29 U.S. universities have formal exchange partnerships with African institutions, and European engagement is lagging behind. This imbalance is not lost on African policymakers and intellectuals, who understand that culture is as much a tool of diplomacy as trade and military alliances. In conclusion, Africa's engagement with the East is not a rejection of the West, it is an assertion of agency in a world where multipolarity is a new reality. The United States and Europe can redefine their relationship with Africa, not through economic coercion or political conditions, but through cultural engagement, technological innovation, and strategic investment in local institutions. The future is not predetermined. It will be shaped by those who dare to imagine new possibilities and those willing to invest in the partnerships that will define the next century. The question is whether the West is ready to meet Africa at the negotiating table as an equal partner or whether it will allow history to repeat itself through missed opportunities. As we stand at this inflection point, let us choose dialogue over division, partnership over paternalism, in a future written not by a single power but through the collective aspirations of all.